We're good to go. That was for the AV guy. We're good to go. Welcome back to the Andrew and Rick Show. I'll be your host, Rick. We're going to be doing part two of Networking Infrastructure and Management. If you had the pleasure of joining us for the previous session, which was before the Windows Microsoft Building Modern City session in this room, with Active Directory stuff, I will like to point out, for the purposes of the evaluation, all the demos we showed you worked up until the very last one. With the exception, that last one really was just some housekeeping stuff. And what was the housekeeping stuff? It was simply the roles had transferred. We were waiting for replication to achieve a level of stasis or convergence, and then we were just trying to demote the old guy and then get it away. Oren actually pointed out to us that, in case you didn't know, we could have done a forcible removal of the domain controllers once the roles were seized or transferred nicely. You always want to transfer stuff nicely. Seizing is not a great thing to do, but you can do it. If you plan on turfing and pulling a bullet in the back of the server for the old domain controllers. And to do the metadata cleanup, it literally is just as simple as deleting the object in the AD users and computers nowadays, because it used to be that you'd have to go in and do this massive, really ugly metadata cleanup within TDS util. I've done that many times in the past. But now the UI simply does that with the GUI interface to be able to fix it up. So we've been sweating to get through and get a nice converged and happy network to be able to show you the networking migration piece of things and to be able to take a look at some new stuff. And that's what we're going to be talking about here for how to get you up there for networking, infrastructure, and management. Should this all go to...
Casted?
I was going to say to HE double hockey sticks. Like that one? That works, eh? Canadian reference, I guess they don't get it. If it all happens to go to pot, there are recordings on channel9.msdn.com from both Europe Tech Ed and also from North America Tech Ed, where we had just as much fun on stage. Also, we had Macca going through and explaining a lot of these expressions that no one had ever heard of in North America. The one that got me the best was chalk and cheese.
They don't understand that in America, right?
It's like... We actually got
so
a question.
You guys eat
that
chalk
was,
over there? So yeah, national food, man. What are you talking about?
Anyway, my name is Rick Claus. I'm a senior technical evangelist up at Microsoft at headquarters in Corp. I just moved there about a year ago from Canada. And this is Macca, otherwise known as Andrew McMurray.
And I'm not usually this dressed.
This is our last session of 10s to be able to talk about migrating your networking infrastructure and networking management.
Who wants a beer? All right, who wants to forget about this and just go have a beer? Hey, all right.
First round is on Macca. I asked this question before. If you were not in the previous session, you know, what part of the infrastructure you're the most concerned with upgrading? And it came back that basically application servers were definitely the top of mind for most people. They are definitely the most complex. After that came up to Active Directory. I was surprised to see that D, which is only 13 people answering the question, came back with network infrastructure. Networking infrastructure is one of those things that it's like Active Directory. You don't really want to screw around with it, because if if you're like me and you get dyslexic when you're tired, you can easily reverse an octet when you're typing something into IPv4, and all of a sudden things aren't working, and you're just batting your head against the wall trying to figure out what went wrong. And then of course a colleague with a fresh set of eyes can look at it and say, "Oh, well that IP address is wrong. Go off and fix that." We will not be covering an IPv6 IP address translation from IPv4. We don't have the time.
Who really wants to do that anyway?
Well, seriously. I want to have my toaster on the internet and my refrigerator on the internet and my server on the internet. That's coming. That's there. It's all there. What I will say is, obviously, since 2012 and even some of 2002, all of our tools were ready to go for IPv6. So, for instance, stuff we're going to be showing you today with IPAM, it's set to go off and manage IPv4 and IPv6 when you're ready to go. Same thing with DNS, same thing with DHCP, same thing with all of our converged networks and software-defined networking. It supports IPv4 and IPv6, so we're set to go for that. So, I do have a question for you. What would you say is probably the most important networking service inside your networks today? DNS, almost unanimous, I would say. I would actually hazard to say that there is one that's more important than DNS. DHCP. If you don't have an address, you can't even query DNS in the first place, right? So believe it or not, I would say IP addressing is probably one of the most critical things that we all take for granted. It's just something that we know. Is probably the most important thing that's out there. So DNS is obviously a very quick and hard, fast second. In case you blinked and missed it, DNS migration is something that's actually covered with Active Directory. Because by default, the way that most things are set up that I've seen in the production world is that people have gone through and realized the importance of DNS mapped into Active Directory. They go together like peanut butter and jelly. Is that a good one?
That'll do.
That works, yeah? They're not chalk and cheese. It's peanut butter and jelly.
Love that chalk.
That basically they need to be able to query, right? You ask DNS the question, where is my domain controller inside my site? Who's the authoritative responsible service provider for this? And it comes back with the answer, go talk to this guy, and then you continue on down the path of querying Active Directory. So obviously DNS is very, very important. But networking-wise, networking switches, DHCP broadcast zones, being able to DHCP relays to the proper servers, having the proper information inside your scopes, proper lease utilization, all sort of stuff is extremely important to be able to go up and to have up and working. And in fact, we
yes.
kind of...
Sorry.
Is that this?
Pretty much.
Okay. So we basically expect dial tone. I'm expecting dial tone from you there, buddy.
Sure as hell hope I got dial tone right here.
We basically expect dial tone from our IP addressing because without it, our networks obviously don't work. Our clients don't work. It doesn't matter how many smartphones, tablets, doesn't matter who makes them, if they're a fruit device, a robot device, or a Microsoft device. They will not work if they cannot get to the network. And be able to locate resources with DNS after the fact. But all too often, what usually happens is, you know, maybe in your environment, I don't know about you, but in my environment where I used to work, there was the networking guy. And that networking guy was responsible for all the switches and all the stacks and all the addresses. And if he got hit by a bus, we're screwed. Because it was all in his head or on sticky notes or on pieces of paper scrapped around for how to be able to go off and do different things. So we're expecting dial tone. But all too often, most people end up in this kind of situation where their most vital resource is just kind of humming along and working, and it's just there. When it doesn't work, that's when all of a sudden things go wrong. Sort of like tombstones.
Yeah.
So this is actually how our network might be all of a sudden. This was actually a photo I took in Tech Ed North America. This poor little... telephone booth that had been vandalized and neglected for so long. It still took quarters, if you wanted to give it a quarter. I don't know how you could actually dial it, but I took another shot, I didn't actually include this one here, where I fixed it by basically taking my Windows phone, putting it on top, and then attaching the cable into that, and I was going to give free phone calls to people, but didn't work. Anyway, we expect dial tone, and more than often, it tends to be a little bit neglected. So, the challenge that we're faced with today basically comes down to we need to have a simplified networking infrastructure. We've gone a long ways and talked about software-defined networking here at Tech Ed New Zealand, and also have many sessions on that at other Tech Eds as well. The ability to go through and to literally take that application that has been living side by side, untouched with hard-coded IP addresses that you now have inherited, and trying to move that into a dynamic data center is next to impossible without re-IP addressing it. Software-defined networking allows you to basically run that guy literally inside like a bubble, but still allow him to communicate no matter where those two different nodes happen to sit. Even on different subnets, you can completely isolate the network that it's in and still allow communication to it, all with software-defined networking. So that's definitely one of the things we've been able to address. We need to come up with a guaranteed high level of service level agreement if the network goes down, better manageability, better control, better documentation, making sure we put up a different level of resiliency. Who here makes DHCP scopes as super scopes? Who here goes in and, a couple people, who here goes in and basically has the DHCP server in a clustered environment? Who here goes in and uses a different third-party DHCP solution to be able to provide IP addressing because they want to have more power and more flexibility to things? A couple people as well. We're trying to give you some of these things inside Server 2012. We basically have to worry about keeping things working under hardware failures, making sure that complex network changes can take place, and ultimately driving better performance, higher density, lower stuff, blah, 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 insert buzzword here. So with 2012, what do you get? Basically, in the box with 2012, and again with 2012 R2, one of the biggest things for your dial tone network is the ability to continue to serve out correct IP addresses to people using DHCP. We've now made it so that we have the ability to have a resilient IP addressing solution with DHCP failover, and you can architect that failover solution to work in a variety of different ways, and it works for whatever kind of client you want. How about getting out of the paper and spreadsheet way of managing your IP addresses?
Whoa. Who gets paid by the hour?
Yeah.
Or again, you want to stay there, don't you?
Unfortunately, if Bob gets hit by a bus, then all of a sudden you're out of luck to be able to figure out how to bring up that next server.
Yeah, but this is what God invented the work experience kid, right? Who's taken on the work experience kid before? There is nothing better than handing the work experience kid an exercise book and a pen and saying, go take an IP inventory. Make them earn their $5 a day, damn it. They're going to love you forever. You know, they're up and coming. They're going to take your jobs eventually. So you want to pound it out of them right now. You don't want a job in IT. Oh, that's being recorded, isn't it? Sorry about that.
That's being a little bit cynical. Anyway, we're going to talk about how you can get rid of the paper spreadsheets and paper management and how to do different things. And also talking about delegation and querying and using that information. There's a lot of information stored under what type of device is connected up to your network with what IP address and also from what port potentially. To be able to do some searching, auditing, and resources and stuff like that from a management perspective. And then finally, WSUS, being able to do patches. I guess it was Patch Wednesday here. You guys don't call it Patch Tuesday, it's Patch Wednesday. Is the time zone differences. You know, being able to handle those patches and be able to hold them at the gate to be able to make sure they're tested and good and pass them down to your clients. WSUS is fantastic to be able to do that. So, first off, you're all in, you're still here. No one's run screaming from the room that they don't want to be here to learn about networking stuff, so I'm assuming you guys want to get there. I luckily went out and I found a map. This actually was a map that I found when I was in Europe.
It's probably about the clearest one I've ever seen.
To be able to find out how to get there. So basically, you want to take the second exit. The first exit, but if you miss the first exit, you have to go around again. But, sorry, I missed it all up, so try it off again.
Makes sense to me.
I still, even when I come down south, I always make sure I'm traveling and walking the streets with at least one individual from Australia, New Zealand, because I have had my life saved so many times by someone coming up behind me, grabbing the scruff of my neck and pulling me back because I'm looking the wrong direction to see if a car's coming.
Happened last night.
Thank you, Macca. I appreciate that. So first off, we have migration tools. Did you know we have migration tools? They are in-box. They are free. Mm-hmm. You can use these tools yourself to get a bunch of stuff done. They are essentially the same tools you would have used in Server 2008 R2 to do some migrations if you were interested. How do you find these tools? Well, it's pretty hard to find them as far as documentation is concerned. Let me see if I can figure that out for you here.
It's pretty tough.
If we go to Bing and then type in Windows Server 2012 migration, enter, the search results will come up, and we are on the first page at least.
Is anyone in the room a sales guy? That's probably a little bit too hard for you.
So, on that particular TechNet article, it basically talks about what the migration tools are, where you get them from. It literally is simply an add feature to a particular Server 2012 box to be able to extract to install the tools, and then you have to go in and extract some packages. To do that, basically, once you've got that done, these are the individual PowerShell commandlets that you'll be using to be able to do the migration of different things. Gets make server feature and basically discovers what's available to be used. Export, import individual settings for different roles. And then the send receive is kind of antiquated, if you will, to be able to actually move data from one server to a different server while preserving the ACLs for individual files. Generally, it's going to be an export import that you're going to be doing the most on this particular environment. We're going to be using export import for doing DHCP migration because DHCP migration, if you have very large scopes with lots and lots and lots of reservations and lots and lots and lots of active leases, sometimes simply doing a backup and then doing a restore doesn't work for you. You miss a bunch of stuff and then you just end up in a bad spot. And so it's a definite higher level of consistency using the export-import settings for DHCP on an individual box to be able to do it. Architecturally, you go through and basically, first of all, do your search on Bing or your favorite search engine. You'll find this TechNet migration portal. You go ahead and read the migration guidelines. You're all going to read those guidelines, right?
Every single one.
There's a section for every single migration topic that's in there, including Active Directory, including networking services, including file servers and the like that's in there. And then architecturally, what you're going to have is you're going to have your old source server. You extract the tools on the most modern version of where your target's going to be. So in this case, it's 2012. You then go and you extract a package from those source files, copy them to the source, which is the old, run the commands, export and send, based on what you're trying to do. Potentially, you could save stuff to a temporary location. Sometimes it's a USB stick, sometimes it's an actual file share. And then you run the import on the receiving side to be able to bring this information in. It goes and reads the files that were previously exported, has to be unlocked with a password, and then goes ahead and brings all that sort of stuff over. That's the general architecture for how this works. Everyone understand? How about we reinforce that a little bit and actually show it to you? Mac is going to demonstrate how to extract, install the tools, extract the tools, and make them available on the appropriate machines.
Cool.
You're ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sir?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go.
Just also as a public service announcement, we will be leaving time to be able to draw that lovely Nokia 520 phone based on trivia questions, so pay attention as we go through these.
Alrighty. So first thing we've got to do is actually get the Windows Server Migration Tools source files down onto the 2012 machine that we're then going to use to extract the appropriate operating system level full tools to dump across to the older version. So first thing I'm going to do here is just add roles and features again. You've seen this a million times before, so we'll skip through it fairly quickly. But this time what we're doing is we're simply moving straight across to features. And if I can just zoom in there, you'll see that one of the features we have here is the Windows Server Migration Tools. So we're going to choose those.
To be extremely clear, he's on the most modern patched version of the server that he wants to migrate to as the source to generate these tools.
Correct.
Don't use the older ones that are on 2008 or 2.
It's not going to work. They're not going to connect to a 2012 box at the end of the day because they don't know what it is. So we bring those down, and it's basically just installing them into Windows System 32 Server Migration Tools. And that will then give us a beautiful tile on the awesome modern start menu on Windows Server 2012 that we can then click to get us into a PowerShell commandlet. I love it. I got nothing to say. Alrighty. So at this point we do a little bit of dance. We're waiting for the feature installation to complete. Maybe a bit more of a dance. Just a little bit more. Draw a prize, Rick. Draw a prize, Rick, for God's sake. Alright, here we go. Close. And look at that. Bang, there we go. We've got ourselves the Windows Server Migration Tools. Told you it looked nice. Alright, and there we are. Now, at this particular point, we're just going to move ourselves to
Wait, stop. Can you just make that larger so they can see that?
I can certainly make that larger.
Just so you guys can see it in the back there.
Console. I was going to zoom in.
There you go.
Well, there you go. That's even better. Can everyone see that okay? Right. Oops. I hate typing at the command line. If there's one thing I really despise... I was about to. You've got to get far enough. If you just type server, it's going to give you a whole bunch of options when you hit tab. So I was just getting to that MI bit, and we're going to be fine. All right, so now that I'm here, what I need to do is go and generate the package of files that I'm then going to transfer across to the 2003 box in order to do the migration, in this case, of DHCP across. So I'll do a smigdeploy.exe, and then I need to tell it that I want to create a package, and the package is for a certain type of architecture. And that architecture in this case is a 64-bit version of Windows Server 2003.
Remember I told you that this was a unicorn install? I don't know where he got the bits to install 64-bit 2003, but it works.
And I'm going to stick the source files that I need to put across into a folder called Migration Tools on the root of the C drive. Yeah, that was simple, wasn't it? Now what we've got, I'll just open up another copy of File Explorer, is a folder called Migration Tools, and inside that I get a folder for the actual migration binaries that I've created for a 64-bit version of WS03, and you can see them all in there. So what we now want to do is literally copy those across.
Don't forget, you need to do that for every architecture that is a possible source. So that also could be a 64-bit 2008 or 2002 box as well.
Cool. Enjoy that, won't you? So now that we've done that, we'll go across to our 2003 box, like so. And over here, we've got ourselves a working DHCP server. But the first thing we need to do is go and install those tools onto that particular machine. So I'll just open up a command prompt, run it as administrator, without restricted access. Thank you very much. All right, and now I'm going to have to change this one as well. I do beg your pardon, so we'll get that done very quickly.
It's going to be too big, that one. I'll find it.
There you are.
Now go back to Consolas. Do 20.
You want 20.
There you go.
There we go. All righty. And now what we'll do is we'll just go back to our C drive. And we'll go into Migration Tools. Like so. And we'll just run smigdeploy.exe. Now what that's going to do is in our administrative tools section, it's going to create a program group for the migration tools and allow us to go into a PowerShell window from there. So we'll hit that. Since you have done that for you, opens a PowerShell window for me immediately, but you should now see that your migration tools are appearing inside there now as well. So
you should mention that there is a dependency on .NET Framework 3.5 on this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was already previously installed.
Yep.
It would have actually prompted you saying, hey, you don't have .NET Framework on there. Please make sure you have it installed.
Cool. All right, they're in.
Good. So I guess we should get back to this over here.
Yep.
Get my clicker. So you did the built-in migration tool install. So the first thing we're going to be doing is migrating a 2003, in this case, DHCP server over to 2012. This is how hard it is. You have your DHCP server that's up and running, 2003 R2, 2008, 2008 R2, and you're going to migrate it to 2012. Let's go ahead and do it.
Okay.
There's nothing there. It's so simple.
It really is that simple. So we're back on our first DHCP server here, and I know you wanted to see those first three steps of the wizard again, but sorry. If anyone can remember the exact names of each title box there without having a look on the left-hand side, maybe you'll get a... No? Okay, forget it. All righty. We're going to go DHCP like so. Going to go next. 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 Restart if you want to. You won't need to, but what the hell. Install. Okay? That's real hard. Then, of course, you've got to go and authorize the DHCP server with Active Directory to actually be able to go out and provide IP addresses to anybody. Now, normally speaking, what you'd do is go into the DHCP administrative tool at that point. You'd right-click the server, choose authorize, but as part of the 2012 installation process for roles, it will give you the opportunity to go ahead and configure that at the end of the wizard so you don't have to worry about going into it separately. Let's wait for that to finish. You'll be pleased to know that I've actually got two DHCP servers running 2012 in this environment to do the DHCP failover. I've already installed DHCP and authorized it on the second one, so you don't have to go and sit through this again. You want me to drink that?
No.
All right. Okay. So as you can see, I can now complete the DHCP configuration, and when I click that, it will basically fire off a very simple authorization wizard for me. As you can see. Allowing me to choose which credentials I'm using to authorize the DHCP server in Active Directory. I'll use the current user because that's correct. And it's done. There you go. It was that hard.
Because he's using Server Manager right now, this again could be done entirely from a Windows 8 or an 8.1 machine using the RSAT tools without having to log on interactively with the server. I'm going to keep on repeating that because that's the new way that you manage your servers. You don't log on interactively to the server. That's where problems can possibly pop up with having access tokens being stolen, with having bad stuff installed and that sort of thing if you happen to surf the web from a server for some strange reason. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Not that anyone's ever done that before, right?
No.
Alrighty, so we're back over on the 2003 side now. So here is our active DHCP server. You see it's got a scope already. If we go look at the address pool, we're giving out 100 IP addresses. You can see that we're a very large company and we're giving out four at this point.
Work with us. It's a massive, massive DHCP implementation.
It's huge, and I don't know if anyone noticed, but one of them was DC2. And we've got, that was from the other,
the previous
that was turned
demo.
On before. We've got the DNS server set to what we need in part of the scope options, and we've also got our DNS domain name set up, so we're all good to go. Now, the first thing we're going to do is just jump ahead.
Your DHCP scope options, is it pointing to 21 or to 11?
21.
Good. You fixed it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Carry on.
Oh, jeez. What does he take me for? An Australian, so no wonder he's worried. All righty. So now that we're here, what we're going to do is go ahead and migrate this. Now, the first thing we probably should do is back this up, because if we screw this up, we need to be able to go back to where we were.
No, we don't screw anything up.
Of course not. No. And you've seen that firsthand.
Yes.
So, if we right-click the machine itself, you see that I can choose to back up the DHCP database. That's a simple two-click job. That has now backed all of that up to a text file that we can then restore later on if all of this goes to custard.
So I will mention that is a viable migration option. However, my personal experience with it has been in very large scopes and very large implementations and lots of reservations and stuff. Generally, it's got about a 50 to 80% success rate on a good day, and you'll end up missing some stuff. So it's there just as a preventative measure to make sure it's all good.
Okay. Now, we have to type out the dreaded PowerShell commands and get them right the first time. Otherwise, we look stupid.
Do you want me to proofread as you go?
Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is stop the DHCP server.
So this is when you're actually going to interrupt services being provided, obviously, to your customer.
So we're going to do this quick, right? We're not going to make any mistakes?
In theory you don't really need to be that quick, because your lease life is going to be good for the half-life of the lease, and then try to renew every 8 as it goes down. And potentially, it's only going to be affecting net new machines that don't currently have a valid address. So you do have some window of opportunity. Migration-wise, it's also possibly good that you might want to reduce your lease life for a period of time leading up to the migration of DHCP to make it so that people will get the refresh information faster when it becomes available. Is everyone writing down this command he's writing?
That was easy, wasn't it? Now we've got to give it a password because it's going to encrypt the file.
Do you want to share what that command is, actually? Can you
see what that's actually doing is that's going off and it's reading. What it's doing is we're exporting the settings for the feature ID of DHCP.
Right.
What we're also doing is we're taking a copy of the IP config of this machine, because we're going to want to emulate the MAC address of this particular server at its destination. And then we want to save all of that information in an XML file in the path C migration DHCP. And we want you to tell us lots about it, please.
There's also one more little hitch to this. If you remember from your networking days of DHCP, it's a broadcast-based solution. It needs to have MAC address. The client needs to know where to go back to be able to find out where it needs to renew its address from. So we do want to migrate the IP address to the new box to make it completely seamless. Otherwise, the clients will just try to go back, doesn't exist, time out, give up, look for a new one, and then move to the new guy. We don't want to have that happening. It also will go through and migrate the groups required to be able to administer the box too.
Yep, that's true. So now what I'm doing is I'm going to run an ipconfig/all on this machine and pipe the output to a text file. Because we've taken the MAC address and we've put it into the encrypted XML file, we need to know what that is so that on the FAR server, the server that we're migrating to, we can effectively re-import that. So
scopes are basically assigned on a per network card basis. You must have the same number of network cards from the source to destination when doing your migration, and you basically are matching up. This old MAC address for this particular scope is going to be matched up to this guy on the new side and basically make that association.
Now I'm running a NetSH command to delete the entry for the 2003 DHCP server.
So you're deauthorizing the box and Active Directory.
Effectively. And then I'm going to turn it off. Making sure I don't get that wrong.
Looks good to me.
How many spaces are there between delete and server?
Sorry.
Yeah, that would screw that up.
Now, obviously, you could be doing this through a GUI interface, too, if you wanted to deauthorize the system. You don't need to, though.
Okay, we've done that. So now what we want to do is just get rid of that and take that output, which is currently sitting in the C drive. There's a migration directory. So we'll copy that across to the 2012 box where we're going to migrate it to.
Obviously, you could point that to an in-between temporary storage server that they both have access to if you wanted to.
Yep. Okay, that's over there. Now what we'll do is we'll go back across to DHCP1, which is already authorized with Active Directory, as you're aware. And we'll go into the migration folder here, go into DHCP, and have a look at that ipsettings.txt file. And the one that we're interested in is this physical address here, 00155D017079. Okay, we're going to need to take that, and when we do the import setting on this side, we're going to need to specify that MAC address as listening on this particular computer. So we'll go back into our PowerShell command, like so. Actually, we probably don't want that one. We want this one. Oh, sorry, Rick. I've disappointed you again.
There you go.
There we go. Look at that. Looking good. And now what we'll do is we'll run an import smig.
Hang in there.
We will close that down, go back here and open that just to be sure. There we are. We already had that one open. All right. So now we'll do an import, smig Server setting.
Yep.
This time we'll do a nice feature ID, again, DHCP, because that's what we're going to be pulling in. Minus IP config, so we're grabbing the IP config data. We're looking at the source physical address being 00, what was it again? 15, 5D, sorry, I'm reading my crib notes here.
It's also inside the text file you can just use.
70, 79, yeah, I don't want to go mucking around with resizing Windows again.
And the MAC addresses are the same.
They are.
In your demo environment.
And the target physical address. The target physical address, says he, as he just double checks. So our target physical address is 70-C6, which is correct. So 00155D01. You're all hoping you don't get a question like this on the exam, aren't you? You can guarantee, though, that if Bruno had anything to do with it, it's screwed.
True or false, the IP address, MAC address, for the DHCP server demo was 50-50 chance.
Okay, so just to finish that off, so we're looking for this source physical address, we're merging it with the target physical address on this particular box, we're forcing this to happen, and we're looking in the path migration DHCP for a MIG file, which is already there, and then I want you to tell me lots about it. So we go look at the file and we say, right, we found a file, it's got a password, what's the password? Well, it's this one. Now, before we go any further, does anyone want me to do a bullwinkle, nothing up my sleeve thing and show you DHCP on this box?
Yeah, I can see it, man.
All right.
DHCP should be blank on that box.
And you can see there's no scope.
Yep.
Okay. So we're all happy with that? Nothing up my sleeve? Go. Thinking about it.
I like the ASCII animation. It's good.
Now, who didn't love ASCII animation in the old days, huh?
I love when it's installing something, it goes, ooh.
Remember all those ASCII animations you used to get on your really old phone and you laughed? It was hilarious, wasn't it? Some loser spent all that time making that picture. Wished you could do it yourself.
Collecting data, please wait. I'm glad this is a very small scope with only a couple of active leases.
That's
and a
right.
small reservation.
Yeah, imagine what it would have been like this for real.
Yeah.
And now it's been, 15 days and everyone's trying to get a new IP address. We're all in the land of 169.254 now. Woohoo! Thinking about it.
I'm getting dizzy watching that thing spin. I can tell them about the new stuff in DHCP while we're waiting if you want.
Absolutely do that if you like. Yep, for sure. It'll work. Why? Why do you not believe me?
The new world of DHCP in 2012 and 2012 R2. There essentially is no difference between 2012 and 2012 R2 as far as DHCP is concerned for what's new. The big thing that's available basically is the ability to have a synchronization of DHCP between multiple DHCP servers. And using this, you basically are able to set up a hot failover if you wanted to, or it can do load balancing if you wanted to. You no longer have to worry about having to create scopes on both sides with 80% of the scope on one, 20% on the other, and then flip it around, 80% of this guy's over here and 20% on that guy over there. Now you simply go in and it does a replication of the data across the board between the two different boxes using industry standard protocols to be able to do that and to be able to run. I just saw a big puke of yellow on the screen, so I'm assuming it's done over there. Let's have it, go back and show them
that. Yep, absolutely. All right, so we've got the puke of yellow, looking nice. So now what we can do is
scroll up.
Oh, sorry.
Show them what it looks like. So you can basically see that there is a result. It was succeeded. It goes down to the bottom. It goes through and has the IPv, has all the different settings for the DNS server.
As you can see, though, it is complaining that it doesn't have IPv6 settings, and I'm thinking, like, I care. You want me to do what?
Later on. It does migrate IPv6 and IPv4 at the same time. And it makes sure that everything is all good. Brings it over. Okay, a refresh of the tool over here now.
Give it a refresh. Start it up again because it's turned it off. Because it has to turn off the DHCP while it's bringing everything across.
And here's where it's going to basically check and say, hey, am I authorized to work? Yes, I am. Boom.
There you go. Now. There we are. We've even got the address leases, the address pool, the lot. And no policies, of course. There's our scope options. 21, looking good.
Nice.
Alrighty. So now what we can do is if we just jump back across to a client machine that we've got on the network. All right, what we can do is we can just do an IP config.
Slash all.
Slash all. All right, we've got some stuff there. Now we'll just do a renew. It's 3 months old.
Take a look. DHCP server currently states it's 10.14.
That's right. So let's do a renewal. Of course, he forgot to turn off his 2003 one, so let me just do that. But that's the service has been stopped
anyway.
Don't
shut it down. Just turn it off. Turn that stupid thing off,
would
you?
Yeah, I'm going to.
I'm sick and tired of that box.
All right. Beg your pardon? Yeah, if it's in the database when it's put across, it should renew it with the same IP address. Oop, it's timed out. I may have fat-fingered the physical address. Move on. Nothing to see here. Let me just double check that, eh? Give away some freaking maple syrup, will you?
Okay. No, save it. You might need it. DHCP failover with an active environment if you wanted to. It basically knows if the other servers are available. It has a heartbeat going between them, and if there's a problem, it can go off and start to assume the responsibility of passing off addresses to it. Absolutely no clustering is required to be able to do this. They can be in two different independent subnets. They can be able to go through with DHCP helpers, pass information back and forth across those subnets to be able to go and continue to work. Based on how you architect this, you can have one centralized guy with some distributed guys out in the back being able to do the load, the centralized guys acting as the main passer out of addresses, or the local guys can be passer out of addresses, and this guy in the center is being used just in case. If that's the case, you'd have to architect your DHCP relays to not relay the very first time they see your request. Instead, wait for a couple of times and then go ahead and do the relay to be able to talk to the first guy that has the master set of addresses when you set that up. You are going to be able to set up the DHCP failover and that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, good. Good, good.
You want me to do it now?
No. I'm just checking to see what your client's doing over there.
I'm all good to go.
Because the next slide is doing the failover part, so.
Right. Okay.
Let's see how redundant we are.
Excellent. All righty. So, what I've got now is two DHCP servers. So I have one installed on DHCP1, and I have another installed on DHCP server 2. All right, so I did that before. If we just go and have a look at DHCP over on this second machine, you'll see that at the moment it's just having a little bit of trouble getting itself authorized. And at the moment it has nothing inside it, as you can see. Okay, so there are no scopes there whatsoever. So if we go back to DHCP1, what we now want to do is actually set up a failover relationship. Now, in order to do this, what we do is we simply go to the scope that we want to create a failover relationship for and choose configure failover like so. Now, what it will do is give us a dialog box that looks kind of like Install Shield 2 from 1993, which I guess we could have worked a little bit better on that one. We're going for the scope that we have, and now we simply choose our partner server. So what we'll do is we'll add our server, being DHCP2 in this case. So we'll choose Add Authorized Server DHCP2. Click Next. Oh, DNS has gone on me. Okay. Did I forget to set up DNS on that one? Let me just double check that. I had to do this to a lot of machines very quickly, so I may have actually missed DHCP2.
We had to rapidly change our DNS infrastructure based on our previous demos that were going on.
And that is apparently working.
Do IP config renew on that guy. IP config renew.
Well, it's not ADR, it's not getting it via DHCP anyway. Registered DNS.
Registered DNS, thank you.
It's been initiated. Well, that's a good thing. We've definitely got that on the right box. Let me just check that. 21 is correct. Okay. Let me just go back and try again. 2012 DHCP2. Oh. Why do you do this to me?
Yeah, flush your cache.
Yep. Just double check my DNS server. And that is on DC1. Well, I've got a reverse lookup record for it, which is good. And I have a forward lookup record for it as well, which is even better. So, why are we not seeing it? What is it saying? 25. What is it actually? No. The IP address of the DHCP server is 25. That's correct.
I'll just caution you with doing crowdsourced troubleshooting.
Yeah, see, that's all right.
If they don't know the IP address settings.
Man,
do I hear 26?
That's going to make it very interesting. Sorry? Yeah, I do have the firewall turned on, and I don't think I've actually set the correct ports up, and I can't be bothered, to be honest. So what I'm going to do at this point is turn it off. That's what you call real world right now. Quick troubleshooting. Let's do it again.
And this is being recorded. We could sell this to like the TV networks, I swear. The new reality show.
Has anyone ever watched The Odd Couple before? Moving right along. Let me just see what I can pull back here. Yeah, so when we were out before having a hamburger, just so we all understand the paddle pop reference comment, do you get paddle pops in this country?
Yeah. What are paddle pops?
They're popsicles, dude. Popsicles. This guy walks up to me and he's got a mask on like that guy from V for Vendetta and he's holding a paddle pop stick and he's gone, "You've been chosen." I'm like, I've got a feeling I know where that paddle pop stick's been. And I'm not touching that one. But clearly it's bad karma. I should have taken the paddle pop. Wash my hands afterwards. All right.
So it's a wizard interface. He goes through, you literally define one more page worth of attributes to be able to set up replication. And it checks to see who you're going to authenticate to the other domain control, the other DHCP server as to be able to do it. Goes through. So.
Gee, the IP demo is going to go well, isn't it?
Oh, it's going to go great. So, Maka, how do you track your IP addresses?
I've always been a proponent of the spreadsheet because...
I'm surprised you're using the spreadsheet, actually.
Because you don't need to ping a spreadsheet. You don't need to turn a firewall off. You can just open it up in bloody Excel.
I just flushed your DNS cache there.
Thanks, dude.
So, oh, how many minutes left do we have in this session? Spreadsheets is definitely one way you can do it. I am curious to find out, how do you track your IP addresses? Are they spreadsheets right now? Hopefully, at least something like a spreadsheet. It's better than a piece of paper to be able to do it. The pros, it's very easy to do. It works for very small networks, but as your networks grow, it becomes more and more complex. The problem with a spreadsheet option is obviously as soon as you introduce any change to your environment, like your master DNS server, it becomes instantly outdated because someone else needs to go off and take a look at it, right? Another option you can go through is with some in-house tools. I actually met some guys that wrote their own code for a web page to be able to go off and log and track different addresses. That's all fine, but again, as soon as that data goes someplace, everyone has to use that same thing to be able to do it. I mean, the way I used to allocate IP addresses were very simple. I had a small to medium-sized network. I was using C-class addresses for my subnets. I had routers between my subnets. And I would go through and say, okay, on my 255 address range that I had on 254 address range that I had on one particular subnet, I just kind of reserve the first 10 and just leave them and not use them. From 11 to 20, I'd use those for my servers. From 20 to 50, those would be my hard-coded addresses that need to be for individual workstations that had to be hard-coded or printers or something like that. And then from 100 to 200, that would be my DHCP scope. And that would just be the way that I would do it. There was nothing stopping anyone else from going into that network and just plugging and taking one from somewhere else, and I'd have no idea. And that's generally the way that looks like most of you also did that as well, because most of you are nodding that you're sympathetic in my pain that I've been through. The other way you can go through, and I mentioned some people did use these, are these commercial appliances you can use as well.
Who's got one of them?
There's a couple people over there in the corner that said they used some. Yeah. The commercial appliances tend to have a better level of automation. They got a nice web page to look at it, self-serve features. They integrate in with their own and different types of DNS and DHCP servers. However, they tend to also be quite expensive. And so IPAM is something that we came up with, we didn't come up with the concept of IP address management, obviously, but we've implemented this as a new feature you can install on individual servers to basically be able to manage your environment. So with IPAM, it's inbox, does not cost you an extra dime, works on server, standard, or data center. Inbox solutions that basically complement and work with Microsoft-based DHCP and Microsoft-based DNS addresses. Stabby, stabby, stabby. Are you set?
I think we're good to go.
Okay.
Okay.
Come on. What was it? He doesn't know. Okay.
No, I just turned it off and on again. No worries. That's what you're doing, isn't it?
So why don't you show us the DHCP failover?
Can I just try it first before I... Hang on. I don't want to reconcile that.
I don't think we can reconcile
anything. I don't think we can reconcile anything at this point. You're absolutely right. Hang on a minute. I'm just... Oh, Christ.
Is number two not authorized or something, dude, or what?
Apparently, the only authorized server now is the 2003 one, even though it's turned off. As you were.
Oh.
Is this not the best session you've been to this week? Thank you. The demo gods have just crapped on us.
IP address management. I'm trying to regain control of the room here. Address space management is one functionality what IPAM does. So basically, once you already have your existing components in place and working, you can deploy IPAM to be able to go in and to now manage these remotely from a different console, using standard remote procedure calls and PowerShell commands and other basic trends to be able to go off and manage different systems, provided they are Microsoft-based. You can also use it for network discovery. So it's able to go in and basically query the Active Directory, find out what different servers are in Active Directory, and query them to find out, do they run DHCP, do they run DNS, are they domain controllers, to be able to include them inside your inventory of what can be managed. It also is able to go in and basically, from this one spot, go through and manage servers on the same time. I mean, imagine the ability to go through, once it's all been cataloged in inventory, it's all set to go, and say, I don't know, my DNS server isn't working on .11. I'm going to search all of my scopes across all of my DHCP servers for wherever that is referenced at .11 and change it to .24.
Dude, I'm a professional. It's going to work, all right? There wouldn't be any problems with DNS or DHCP on my network.
You can do that with IPAM. You can do that with IPAM. And then finally, from a visibility and auditing perspective, with a little bit of extra fun and a little bit of extra research, you basically have a log of every single IP address that was given out to every single client, including which address, MAC address was used, and which user account was on that machine to be able to use it. You can actually pull off a list of, show me all the iPads that are in my environment and what addresses they're using and where they got them from and what networks they're signing on from. All just by looking at the log files, and this guy interprets it for you, which is really, really cool. Mm. So, with IPAM components interaction, did you think that's ready to go, or should I keep on going?
It is? What? It's ready to go. DHCP failover. Take three. Right. As you can see, we've got a Contoso Corp scope. It's got a few things in it. Never mind the fact the client couldn't get anything off it. It doesn't matter anymore. We've got a second DHCP server. We're going to share that scope with the DHCP server. We've put in the name. We've typed it in manually because when we chose Ad Server and got that list of authorized ones, we couldn't see it. But we don't care anymore because we're hitting next. And it works! And now... But we're not going to check the other end to see if it appears. Now, we're going to choose what type of mode we're doing. Are we going load balancing mode or are we going hot standby mode? So in a load balancing mode, we're doing an active-active type of thing where both servers have a certain amount of IP addresses they can give out and they will both service clients. Hot standby, I do nothing. Until first one dies, then I do something. Pretty simple, right? Okay, so we'll go load balance. We will put in a shared secret that they will use to establish the relationship in the first instance.
And obviously, in case anyone hasn't mentioned or noticed this before, we're doing this failover with another Microsoft DHCP server. It works Microsoft to Microsoft.
I would just like to point out the 5 instances of the word successful there. And if we now jump across to our second DHCP server.
I thought you weren't going to check it.
I wasn't, but I'm feeling good. Oh, there it is! Bang! Let's do some IPAM, shall we?
Oh, okay. Let me quickly take you through a little bit of the architecture. Oh, question.
So when it's in standby or pilot, is it actually detecting that
the
DHCP is there?
Correct. There, when it's
repeat
the question. All right, so when it's in hot standby mode, is the partner DHCP server actually checking the health of the first DHCP server? Is it actively...
Is it the server?
It's checking for the server, and it's also doing a remote procedure call to see if the service is live as well.
It also replicates all the changes going on for any new addresses going on. When it loses that connection, it says,
Especially in a load balancing scenario, they need to replicate the information between each other so they don't accidentally start giving out the same IP addresses. I'm going as fast as I can, man. I know I've only got a couple of minutes left. So, yes, is your answer. It's all good. It'll work. It will work. You've seen it work.
Okay.
That's a good question. I'm not sure the
question is IP helper configuration. Do you have to have it known where it happens to be? So basically IP helper in one subnet has to forward the request on this subnet across the way as the other guy. Basically the local, if you have two DHCP servers, one on each side, this guy's going to be answering before the IP helper kicks in, right? You have a delay on the IP helper if you're able to forward it. This guy basically disappears. It's not going to be working anymore. The clients are going to go off the IP helper and it's going to come across the other side. He's going to say, hey, I haven't been able to talk to that guy in a little while. I'm just going to hold off a little bit to see if he comes back online. And basically after a period of time, which is configurable, if he doesn't hear from him, he starts to issue addresses out on his behalf. When this guy comes back up and online again, he realizes time has passed because they've talked to each other and he replicates those changes for what's actually happened. And then he starts taking back over again. That's the simplified form for how that works. Let me talk about IPM. Quickly, because I want to make sure you guys get this.
Is it party next, or is there another?
No, there's one more session. Architecturally, you've got the IPAM service installed. You've got clients that are running on the client tools from an RSAT. Architecture, the way it works, is agentless. It goes off and talks to these guys as part of the same domain for DHCP, DNS, DCs, and also network policy servers. You then have the ability to go off and to delegate out control and responsibility to both IPAM administrators all up, just to the address space managers, just to the management server administrators to be able to do searches, regular IPAM users, and then also, the audit controls. And then finally, you've got a WID database. In 2012 R2, you now have a SQL database you can use instead. The WID database is the built-in one you can use to basically be able to go off and to store all this data. What happens is the IPAM goes out, queries the machines, finds out where they are, remotely goes and downloads the stuff it needs to, and it stores it local inside the WID database. The WID database then allows you to run your queries against it, be able to do addressing to it. Basically, I think of IPAM as a way of putting the human side of information along with your scopes. Like, reserve this block of addresses as the block that's used for your servers. And you wouldn't have no way of doing that inside a DHCP scope, but you can do that because you now have a database with those differences and where that sits. We're not going to have time for this demo, dude.
I really don't think we are, no.
Sorry, man. Can't do it.
Oh, come on.
The last thing is you have the ability to go through and to basically run PowerShell against this to be able to do massive exports from your existing non-Microsoft systems in CSV file format to be able to bring them in to your known world inside your IPAM database and IPAM configuration stuff for where that is.
One thing I'll add on to that too, I don't know if Rick mentioned it and I was staring at my screen at the time, but the Windows internal database is the only database you can use in Windows Server 2012. In R2, we add support for SQL as the database as well.
I did say that.
Thanks.
There you go.
No worries.
IPAM is something I will warn you if you're going to try this out. It can be a little bit frustrating to get set up. Yeah, thank you. So it can be a little bit frustrating to get set up. It does require that you basically install a service, you identify the domain you want to work with, it then has to go in and basically export and create some group policy settings, it has to add those in, they have to replicate and converge, then they can go off and do some scans. Once that's done, it can then go in and control the machine. So it is an in-step intensive process. It is documented what you have to go through. Don't try to rush it. Mm. And that's why we're not doing the demo right now.
Well, those group policies, what they actually do is basically just configure the firewall on the end devices to allow the IPAM server to actually check the different services it needs to based on whether or not the end station is a DC, a DNS box, DHCP box, network policy server, whatever that case may be. I personally feel very comfortable about running this demo and feel it will work the first time. But I've only got a couple more minutes left, so I don't know if we're going to get there in time. Right now, we are currently sitting on an installation of about 64%, and we're very unlikely to get there.
The install itself for IPAM?
That's the install for IPAM. I don't think I've got time to show everything, unfortunately.
The install process is the same for 2012 and 2012 R2. I will state, if you're interested in trying this out in your own sandbox, there is a hands-on lab available for Windows Server 2012 hands-on labs that is IPAM and IPAM in a Windows Server 2012 R2 environment that you can go off and try in your sandbox on your own time to be able to go off and get a little bit of playtime with this.
And if you do want to try setting up a trial in your lab environment and you don't necessarily want to use a preset hands-on lab, there is a really good two-part walkthrough guide on TechNet under the IPAM section that will tell you exactly what to build in your lab environment to get it running and to test it out. So definitely go to TechNet, go to the IPAM section. It was that walkthrough document that I basically used to build my IPAM creation demo. Had nothing to do with anything else. The IPAM one worked really well.
Last is simply migrating WSUS. Again, this is up to you if you want to go ahead and do a migration of WSUS. If you do a migration, you're able to preserve your computer groups. You're able to preserve your authorizations of previously authorized patches. You're able to preserve your local database of locally downloaded files. But it is a very intensive non-migration tool migration process. That basically is migrating a bunch of SQL content from one database to a different database with some tools that are quite fun to do.
You will be hacking tables.
Yeah, you're hacking tables to be able to make it work. Mm-hmm. It is able to be done, or if it's not worth the effort for you to be able to migrate it, you could simply go in and simply start afresh with a new one, pointing your clients to it, and then have to recreate those computer groups and reauthorize those different things. So it's your call for how you want to go ahead and approach that.
We have less than a minute, so we need to give some free stuff away.
So we have an easy way of doing this, sort of.
What, we just throw them? And
yeah, we just throw them. So what I have for you here is actually quite simple. It's a true or false. If you want to play this game, raise your hand for true. Don't put your hand down for false. The first question is, Rick lives in Canada. True or false?
Right, so everyone won. Is that correct? Or hang on, you just said true or false, and everyone put their hand up. So which one was it?
But now, you just broke it, dude. I was running this. I know what I was doing.
Sorry, man.
The answer to that one is now irrelevant. I'm from Canada. I don't currently live in Canada. So all the ones that raised your hands, you would have been wrong. Everyone else would now be in the game to continue to play. However, because...
Oh, we got to work it out that way, do we?
We don't know. There we go. So here's another one. True or false? I need to find one there. Okay. You can import IP address data into IPAM from a CSV file. True or false? Raise your hand for true. Put your hand down for false. Okay. Everyone with your hand up, stand up. You're in the game. Everyone else keeps sitting down. You're out of the game. You can import with IP addresses.
Hey, this is a cool way of doing it.
Stop. Don't screw me up, man.
You can. Oh, I'm not saying a word.
That should have been the name of the stock.
Send you back to Australia.
True or false? The DHCP servers can be authorized by members of the domain admins group. True or false? True if it's correct, false if it's not. The answer is false. If your hand is up, please sit down.
Oh,
there, stay up.
File.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4 people left in this particular question. Come on up here to the front to make sure we're not cheating. Come on up. Four people that are standing, come up to the front.
Woohoo!
Okay.
Pay administrators.
There's one. There's two. Three, and there's the fourth one. Where's the fourth one coming up? Possible winner of a Nokia 520. She left. Oh, no. She thought it was just maple syrup. You need to install .NET Framework 2.0 to be able to run the migration tools. Hand up for true, hand down for false.
Hand up for true.
Oh, you?
You are correct. It is .NET 3.5 to install. You guys are all still in the game. Hand up for true, hands down for false. The PowerShell command to receive transfer data in PowerShell is called receive smig server. You're all wrong. No, stay here. You're all wrong.
Does that mean I get the phone?
Your answer is false. Okay, ready? Here we go. How about this one here for... Nice. I'm trying to think. We have another question that works. How about, where do you install the source files? Where do you install the migration tools from? Do you install them, true or false, from install for media? True or false? Hands up, true. Hands down, false. You guys are too fast, man. False. You do not install it from install for media. You get them from add room features. Go ahead and keep on going there, bud. You know what? Huh? You got it right. So what we're going to have to do now to speed this up, if I can find it, there it is. Heads or tails? Hand up for heads, hand down for tails. When it's in the air, ready? 1, 2, 3. Two heads, one tails. The answer is heads. You're out. Sorry, sir, you can have maple syrup. Between these last two gentlemen, for the phone or maple syrup, here it goes. Hands up in the air for heads, hands down for tails. Only one. Oh. Let's flip that one again.
That was the worst flip I've ever seen, dude. That's perfect.
Heads, you win the phone. Tails, you win the phone.
It's heads.
Heads. Congratulations.
Thanks, everyone.